Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And this hour, you know, we love our dogs, actually. KP and I both love dogs. Scotty does as well. And we all have dogs. But do you know that nearly half of all American households have a pet? It could be a dog. It could be a cat. It could be a fish. It could be all kinds of different things. And many of you have posted pictures of your pets. Oh, please keep them coming all during this hour. I love seeing these animals. This hour, we're going to be talking with a guest who's written a very interesting piece in Scientific American, Why Do We Have Pets? Daisy Juhas is with us. Daisy is a science writer based in New York. She's associate editor for Scientific American Mind, and she writes on all kinds of things, the quirks of human behavior and particle physics, and she's covered all kinds of issues for Scientific American, Audubon, On Earth, Symmetry Magazine, and she looks at a lot of different studies that show what it is about our attraction to animal companionship, what scientific studies have taught us about that, whether or not we have some part of our brain that makes us become attracted to particularly babies and puppies and very young animals, and if that in some way makes us better human beings. It's all kinds of interesting studies. And we'll be welcoming phone calls for her. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Why are animals so appealing to us, and why do we invest so much in them? The questions of this hour. Daisy, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Kathleen.
And you started with your dog you got for your 10th birthday. You got a puppy.
That's right, yeah. And I was actually, like a lot of kids, I had been asking and asking for years, and I didn't think it was going to happen. So when it did, I burst into tears, which, needless to say, terrified my parents, worried for a minute they'd done the wrong thing. But no, we loved our dogs growing up.
And Happy lived for 14 years. That's a good long life.
That is, yeah, no, and he was very much a part of the family, which when I was researching this story, I found out that's the way most Americans feel about their pets. Not, you know, they're not property, they're not even companions, they are family members.
They really are family members, aren't they? And it's interesting that we spend an incredible amount, you included early in your article, the amount of money that we spend on our companions and all the hours that we spend taking care of them. It's really a huge chunk, isn't it, in both cases?
Absolutely, yeah. It's last year about $58 billion spent on pets. It's amazing. We lavish a lot of love and affection and money in some cases on them.
Mm-hmm. So you've cited a lot of different psychological studies in your article, and you write about how our interactions with animals can be useful models for understanding how issues of identity, nurturing, support, and attachment play out in a relationship. That's quite a bit.
Yeah, it's amazing. One of the things, there's no one answer to why we have pets, but one of the recurring things that I found as I was doing research for this article is the fact that a lot of patterns in our relationships with animals resemble our relationships with people. And so a lot of researchers hope that by studying these relationships, they can learn more about the way we interact with one another, too.
Mm-hmm. And the studies, we're seeing more and more, and particularly with dogs, we're seeing more uses for dogs with people who are sick, with people who have learning disabilities, with people who are struggling how to read. The uses, and service animals, to say nothing of them, the uses are just remarkable, and it seems like we've only touched the surface in that regard.
I think that's true, yeah. There's a lot of potential there. There's a lot of really interesting findings, exactly as you say. And it's clear that, maybe not surprisingly, people who maybe are struggling to connect to other humans for whatever reason may have an easier time with animals. And so that's another reason why they can be incredibly useful, although they are much more than just sort of first aid kits for problems.
Mm-hmm. Toddlers 1 to 3 years old spend more time interacting with live animals than they do with inanimate toys if they have a choice. Who did that study, and what does that teach us?
Right. So that's led by a psychologist then at Rutgers University, Vanessa LeVue. And I believe she was actually interested in fear. And so that's part of why she was working with some less friendly animals like spiders and snakes and that kind of thing, as well as more conventional hamsters and things. And what it helps us understand is that we are interested in animals from a very young age, before even culture and society and our family tells us exactly what to think about those animals. So there seems to be what researchers call an innate interest in other animals.
And this is all kinds of animals. It's just not dogs. You even include snakes and spiders and geckos.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you see this with young kids. They have this really broad interest in nature and living things. And as you get older, you have experiences that maybe make you more cautious or afraid, or maybe you hear things from your peers and you realize, wow, I don't really actually want a pet spider. But there's a lot of variation there.
Humans even have specialized brain cells for recognizing animal life?
That's right. Specifically in a part of the brain that's related to emotion called the amygdala. And something we don't mention in the article that I loved was they were able to even pinpoint it to parts of the brain that reacted to cute animals as opposed to other kinds of animals. So we do seem to be wired, if you want, for responding to different kinds of animals that we interact with.
Mm-hmm. Why cute animals? Why not just any animal? What is it? And what makes an animal cute?
Great questions. So in general, what most people find cute happens to bear an interesting resemblance to a human baby. And the pattern that people usually talk about is big eyes and a big forehead and often like a much bigger head than body. And so one theory that seems to be quite plausible is that we are just so primed to respond to our own infants that when we see something that kind of has that same pattern, we also have that sort of immediate, oh, how cute response. And that could explain everything from, you know, certain toys and why they're designed to look a certain way to Disney characters. And absolutely we see this with really cute puppies and kittens that just have that immediate response in us.
Yeah, they do something. They did that, who was it, Jimmy Fallon, who did that thing before the, what was that thing where all the puppies came?
Oh,
it was for the Kentucky Derby. Geez, I kind of watched that over and over 500 times. It was just so adorable to me, all these little guys.
Adorable.
It was. It's just,
And they were right, I think, right? They picked the winner, I think.
Yes, you're right. They did pick the winner. They're even so smart, right? And some of these studies are things that most of us don't know about, and they're fairly elaborate. This psychologist in Japan you write about, college students are looking for a digit in numerical matrices, or they're lifting tiny objects from small holes using tweezers, and then they look at photographs before attempting the motor task for a second time. If you view adult animals or food compared to looking at cute baby animals, it's really interesting how you perform better on the tweezer experiment.
Exactly. And it's actually that tweezer experiment. If you ever played the board game Operation, that's basically what they had these students do. You're lifting out tiny little organs without, you know, touching the sides of the board. And it turns out that looking at the cute baby animals, but not the grown-up animals or the food, will make you better at that game, at that task.
Hmm. And what about when you're looking at, I can't remember the study that was done, whether or not you're looking at your own animals and children compared to others?
Right. So that's actually an even more recent study that found that women who have kids and dogs specifically, when they looked at their brain activity, there's a lot of similarities in how their brain responds to the image of their own dog and their own kid in contrast to somebody else's kid or somebody else's dog. And again, we see that brain area associated with emotion, the amygdala, is again very engaged. So although the response isn't identical because you're not actually confusing your kids and your dogs, there seems to be a lot of overlap in how we feel about our human and non-human care, our children.
And is there, getting back to why we're attracted to these cute little puppies, are there certain kinds of animals, just as we find certain faces attractive or certain human beings attractive, do we find Do we find Labradors more attractive than Boxers? Do we find mutts more attractive than Irish Setters?
That's a great question. So, in general, with the cute, attractive response, we see this resemblance to babies being really important. So, again, like the big eyes and little bodies. But in terms of specific dog breeds and things like that, the research suggests that culture may play a bigger part. Sort of what our neighbors do and what's popular at the time seems to be more important in terms of which breed is most attractive.
Hmm. And you even say television shows have an influence, right?
That's right. And actually, there's a researcher who's done a ton of great work on this. His name is Hal Hertzog at West Carolina University. And one of his findings was that if you look at major films, big blockbuster movies in the past, 50 years even, you can see that in the 10 years after a movie comes out, the dog character that was in that movie seems to inspire a lot of people to get the same dog, whether it's a Labrador Retriever or Dalmatians after 101 Dalmatians. So there's definitely preferences that relate to what's popular at the time.
Isn't that strange?
Yeah, it is. When you actually, the other thing that he's found is that the dog's health or behavior, so whether they are well-behaved or nice dogs, is not as important to us, it looks like, when you look at these big numbers, as this popular breed dynamic. And that's a little scary because it would be better to be picking a dog based on, health and longevity and having a dog that's, safe for kids, if you have kids, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Your interest in animals, you write, depends on personal and cultural experience. Dogs, of course, popular in many Western countries, but considered unclean in traditional Islamic communities.
Right. And actually, dogs are a great example. There have been sociologists who have looked at this in different countries. And just because we are very used to thinking of dogs a certain way, it can be surprising because you go to other parts of the world and they are mostly guard animals, or, in certain cultures in Asia, they are seen as animals you would never use in service situations because that's seen as sort of inappropriate to make your dog your guide. So it's really, there's a huge amount of cultural influence on how we look at our animals.
We're going to welcome phone calls, and the question of the hour is, why do you, I would assume, well, no, we can hear from those of you who don't have pets, but we prefer to hear from those of you who have pets. We're asking the question, why do we have pets? And we're looking at the many scientific studies that give the answer to that question. Our guest is Daisy Uhus. She is a science writer, and she's the author of a piece in Scientific American, Why Do We Have Pets? Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and please post your picture of your pets on Facebook. There are some really darling pictures of dogs and a lot of puppies here and dogs who have passed to heaven, of course, which is where dogs live after they go, and I hope we do too. And they're fun pictures. I love these. Keep posting them, would you please, during the show, and then we can look at them when the show is over. The Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Our on-air phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this hour, Milwaukee Brewers all-star catcher Jonathan Lucroy, Luke, will be with us. He was a volunteer on a Stars and Stripes honor flight last fall with 88 veterans from World War II, the Korean and Vietnam Wars. And it's part of the honor flight program that we've featured several times on this program, providing free one-day trips for veterans to Washington, D.C. to visit their memorials, and then they come home to this incredible welcome. And there's a documentary that Jonathan Lucroy is featured in, and so we'll be speaking with him and with a couple of the vets who went on that flight. It's always an inspiring story. All right, two phone calls. Why do we have pets? The question of the hour. Why do you? Jerry in Stockbridge. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think, at least in the case of dogs, a good part of it, I mean, a very strong underlying cause for it is man or humankind's just admiration and recognition for the qualities that a dog exhibits, you know, devotion. You know, their love, their willingness to sacrifice, and that we recognize and value those qualities so much within ourselves, we see them in these dogs that apparently adopt us, these animals, but we also see them in these animals in a more pure form.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Unqualified. And unrestricted, you know, they give so freely. I mean, this was the underlying theme, if you will, with Byron's Epitaph to a Dog.
I love this answer. Thank you so much for your call, Daisy. The devotion really can be phenomenal, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's absolutely the case that dogs are amazing and that they have this incredible ability to become part of our world and to, they clearly want to cooperate with us, and that's, those amazing, rewarding, loving relationships are a huge, huge reason why they are so important in our homes.
And it goes back thousands of years. They've been our companions, they've been our helpmates for a long, long time.
That's right, absolutely. They have been, they have basically evolved with us, developed with us over the course of their domestication and everything else. They are incredible in that they can read our cues, they can navigate our streets and our world. That's something really special that
yes.
a lot of other animals struggle with.
Yeah. On Facebook, we have a number of pictures of guinea pigs and dogs, and Jan writes, I love their happy, unconditional love. I also need to be reminded to live in the moment, and I've always said that I need a dog to be thrilled when I come home. All that coming home and having an animal thrilled to see you. Nothing beats, nobody is ever as thrilled as your dog is to see you, right?
So true. There is nothing like that welcome. That's an amazing thing.
Why is it? Do you know, are there scientific studies of that? Why is it they just go crazy happy?
It's a great question. We know a little bit from studying different dogs. It does vary depending on how good your relationship is with your dog. So that's something that is important to remember, because they really, they can bond to us in a way that's a lot like the way in which mother and child bond together. And if the relationship is good, just as the child, you know, goes to its mom for support and love, the dog, when you come home, has the same sort of, oh, wow, you're home. Like, I have this safe, you know, reliable person, this being who I love and who loves me.
Aww.
You know, it's a beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing. Jerry, thank you so much. We'll look up that Byron poem, too. Earl, and put it in our Facebook page. Let's go to Earl in Bedford. Hi, Earl.
Hi. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We like to take our Greenland Husky with us and trips and that, and we're still looking for, say, more motels that are available. That's kind of up and down. Also, shady areas if you're going to stop and get something to eat, or you need a place shady and that. So there has been some movement. I think we're finding more motels that do allow them, but still work to be done there, I would say.
Daisy?
Yeah, I think you're right. It is really interesting to see as more and more people acknowledge how important these animals are in their lives, that our society sort of reacts and learns how to adapt and welcome them into all kinds of spaces, including hotels and having more sort of accommodations like rest stops and things like that are also dog friendly.
Tell us about the study, because I find this work, just as I am just dumbfounded when I see service dogs in action, of what they can do, how they just open up the world to people who can't see particularly. But the study that was done of, I can't remember, I think it was in Germany or somewhere, of studies with, I think it was young boys who were extremely nervous about having to do a presentation and how dogs helped them. Do you recall that study?
Yes, that is in Germany. And actually, in Europe, in general, there are a lot of school dog projects where they're bringing dogs into the classroom. And what this study and a lot of those efforts have found is that in young kids and older kids who struggle to feel comfortable around other people, they are able to relax a little bit more if they have a dog nearby. And so in this particular study, I think they worked with about 47 kids, all of whom had a history that showed they had difficulty attaching to other people. And they gave them the scary task of they had to take a math test. They also had to stand in front of a committee of strangers and tell a story. And the kids who were near a dog were much, much calmer when they measured their stress levels compared to the kids who had to do the same task with a friendly person nearby trying to be supportive, or even like a toy dog. So that does show us there's definitely support that we can gain from being near an animal.
Mm-hmm. And let's welcome your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And we're talking about pets and why do we have pets in our lives. This hour of the program, our guest is Daisy Juhas. She is a science writer, and her piece appears in Scientific American. And let's go to Pat in Duluth. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I just wanted to say thank you so much for this program. And I wasn't even a dog person when we adopted our little guy from over in Ashland, but I'm head over heels in love with this little dog. And he has a heart of gold and is just so very dear. And right now while I'm listening to the program, I'm in the kitchen baking, and he has like more than half of the counter space that our kitchen has. It's pretty small because his pillows are there and his pad is there.
Aww.
And he looks out over the back into the yard. And so I struggle trying to find counter space, but he's just like the very best. We just love him so much. And I just want to thank you for this program. I think if they ruled the world, it would be a better place. I really believe that sometimes. So thank you so much.
Daisy.
That's wonderful to hear. And something just interesting that you're not alone, I think, in feeling that way. And I know one of the earlier callers also mentioned a similar thing, that there's this purity and just this wonderful just honest goodness about dogs. A lot of people in surveys and studies say exactly that, you know, they almost see their dog as a role model or a teacher of just a simpler, more loving and honest way to live.
Thank you so much for your call. Cheryl is next in Conover. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have to say, I have had dogs my entire life, and now we still have four dogs, and we're down to one cat. We had four rescue cats. We sent three of them over the rainbow, have one left, and we have four dogs. And we told both our sons that if something happens to either of us, they get nothing unless they take care of the dog. And the cat. And the cat.
And what do they say, okay?
Well, the cat is a little difficult for the one son because his wife has allergies, but we are making decisions as we get older about adopting any more cats unless they're of the older variety. But I don't think we'll ever give up adopting dogs. We have three rescues and one purebred golden retriever, and I don't know about you. I bought a king bed just so that they could watch TV with us.
My kind of gal, Cheryl. I love
it. Well, and I'll tell you one last thing, though. Even though they watch TV with us till 10 o'clock in that king bed, they are crate trained, okay? And so all we say is kennel up, and two go in one, and two go in the other, and they sleep in their crates in our bedroom, and it's a very happy family.
It sounds like it. And do they all get along with each other?
Oh, yes. They are just, every set of dogs we had five at one time. Because we rescued some that were dumped on the side of the road, and then some went on to pass over the rainbow. And so when the last of the goldens left, I just can't live without a golden retriever. I just can't.
Right.
There is no life without a golden retriever.
Right.
And the other dogs, we have two boxer mixes that were dumped on the side of the road, and then the other one is a lab we think she's a lab. We call her Molly Golly the Coyote. You know, she's just as cute as a button. We just, you know, our dogs are there for us. Our kids are busy doing their own thing, and the dogs are always happy when we come around.
Absolutely. Now, you sound like a happy family. Doesn't that sound like it makes you want to go visit them, doesn't it, Daisy?
Definitely. Absolutely. That sounds lovely.
It sure does. Yeah. Do you have a dog now or a cat, Daisy?
Sadly, I do not. Where I live, my apartment, I'm unable to do that, although we have a courtyard below us that has a couple of cats who are very dear to me, and also some regular bird visitors. I'm a birder also. So.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, so I'm an animal lover generally, and I someday will have another dog.
And let's spend more time talking about how as animals may serve as, and we've seen this so true with the number of animals doing hospice work, particularly dogs, how you can become talkative. You can talk to an animal even if you're afraid to read a book or you're just so troubled inside. But there's something about being, and this is true for adults or for troubled children or for troubled adults or whatever, there's something about, I do this all the time with my dog, just talk. You know, just
yeah.
Talk things out.
I think that's true, and they're great listeners, and this is true.
Yes, they are.
Cat owners feel like this too. A lot of animal owners feel this way, that this is, you know, someone that'll listen. They won't talk back, which is awesome. They don't criticize and pass judgment. Occasionally with their eyes, I would say you may get a funny feeling, but they're just amazing confidants that way. And I think you're right. I think little kids feel this way, adults feel this way, people with lots of human friends feel this way, and people who maybe see their dogs as their best friends feel that way.
Right. Let's go to Dwayne in Dalton. Hi, Dwayne.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We've got lots of pets, and then we've had pets all since I've been married. I've been married almost 29 years coming up here. We've got goats, rabbits, chickens, four dogs in the house, four cats in the house. I've got a golden macaw. That's one of those things that just gave the last person that was on gave me a good idea. The golden macaw is going to live for quite a while, and it's going to outlive us. And we've always said that one of the kids is going to end up with it. But I think she's got a good idea there. We'll have to put it in the will that somebody's got to take the bird or they don't get anything. I kind of like that. But yeah, our animals are very personal, and my dog, I love my dog to death. So and she goes everywhere with me. Little rat terrier, and she just knows when I'm home, and she's by my side all the time. I love our pets, so wouldn't grow up without them.
Thank you, Dwayne, for your call.
All right. Have a good day.
You just hear it in people's voices, can't you? Just this, love my pets. I love my dog. I love them.
Yeah, no, it's a wonderful thing to hear. It's an incredibly, talking to people about this topic is such a joy because there's so much emotion. There's so much passion there.
You talk about a lot of this research being in the infancy stages, Daisy. Are there studies going on that you just can't wait to see what the results are going to be?
Absolutely. Since the last caller mentioned a macaw, something that it's just a preliminary finding, so it's something that this researcher has some evidence for, but they're still digging into. There's some researchers in Australia who've looked at birds as pets, and they have some findings that people who have both dogs and birds may in some ways feel they get even more support from their birds, and it looks like it's because they talk back and things like that. So one big hole in the research so far is that we know a lot more about dogs because they are so awesome and easy to work with than we do about other pets. And so I am really curious personally about what differences there are between different kinds of pets and what different kinds of support we can get.
Yeah. Thanks, Dwayne, so much for your call. Pam in Oconto, hi.
Hi. Just listening to the different people talking, you know, you hear about that friendship that, you know, a lot of times you don't find in human contact, you know, because a lot of times your friends will do things to hurt you, and whereas your dogs or your cats, they're always there to greet you. We have a golden retriever that I swear smiles 100% of the time. the neighbor kids will come over and ask if the dogs can come out to play. You know, there's just that genuine love, and they just give you everything they have, you know, right down to the core. And it's just so heartwarming, you know, to have a friend that is so loyal. And I think that's probably the reason that I've always had dogs. I've had more, I guess, experience with dogs. We have three of them right now. And, it is so hard to think of even losing your friends because, like I said, they just take such a special spot in your heart. You just love them to death.
I love these people who have all these dogs, Daisy. We're not just talking your one best buddy. You got five dogs. You got four dogs. You've got three dogs.
Yeah, it's impressive. It's awesome. I'm someone who lives in New York City, so I am sadly, we don't get to do that as much out here, but I'm jealous. That sounds wonderful.
Right. We're in the process of thinking of moving, and I must tell you that I'm a little nervous about the whole thing and obsessed about it, but the other night I had a dream of all the houses that I've been on the inside of. There were at least 50 dogs, and they were all my dogs. And so I was looking at, and by golly, the next day I woke up and I said, oh, this might be the house, even though it wasn't a very good house, but there were 50 dogs in it. I came home from work, and they were all really happy there. So I figured that must be the house to go to. Isn't that weird?
That's
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah,
it's like a sign.
It is kind of a sign, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thanks, Pam, very much for your call. Let's go to Kathy in Brule next. Hi, Kathy. Kathy?
Oh, hi.
Yeah, hi. Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a great show, and it's wonderful to hear everybody calling and talking about their love for their animals and pets. I just want to say that I wish they would extend that love to all animals, because in some cultures, they eat dogs and cats, and all animals feel pain and suffer. And you see pictures of pigs being slaughtered, and then you see pictures of pigs being rescued and loved.
Yeah, how do you explain the cultural differences? And I'm wondering, Daisy, if any of those are changing as we sort of shrink the world.
I think it's a great question. There are totally different cultural sort of attitudes to even the same animal. I think pigs are actually a great example because even in the U.S., right, a lot of people will think pigs first as food or as a farm animal, but we also see, I love sort of animal websites and that kind of thing, and I see a lot of these like micro pigs that are these adorable pets. So we have these very different attitudes about the same animal, and that's actually an open question that a lot of researchers who study different cultures, so anthropologists and sociologists, they really want to try to figure out what's going on here. How can we have such very different attitudes? And they do absolutely change. They change very quickly in some cases. The popularity of like pet clothing and things like that is an interesting example of something that was popular in some cultures at some times and then goes away and then it comes back again in other places. So there's things do change for sure.
Mm-hmm. What are these micro pigs? I don't know about these.
Oh, really?
No. Maybe I'll go get one.
Pigs as pets, and you'll see these. They're little mini pigs, basically, and they are supposed to be amazing, super affectionate, really lovely
really?
Pets. I have not had one or can personally vouch for one beyond having read about them, but they're supposed to be really sweethearts. And, I mean, there's a lot of research into how smart pigs are,
and
so they are probably very, very clever pets also that can be trained to do a number of things.
Really? Micro pigs. I'll have to look into that. Thanks, Kathy, so much for your call. Steve is next in Fitchburg. Hi, Steve.
I'm constantly amazed at how our own culture has changed. I'm 59, and we had a dog when I was a teenager, young. And I have a dog now. We got it 12 years ago when my daughter, our youngest, was 14. And I had no illusions that it was going to be her dog. It was going to be my dog. and when I was growing up with the dog, that was an outside dog. It lived outdoors in the wintertime in a doghouse.
Mm.
And that was my intention, but it didn't work that way at all. And I just, I've learned, you know, never say never when it comes to, you know, the dog has taught me that.
So where does the dog sleep now, Steve?
Pretty much on the floor, but, I mean, she has, she's laying on the bed now.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
You know, the clothes that I leave out, she loves to just, you know, she goes where she wants. She has
right.
to run
the- Yeah, run of the house. I got the same kind of situation.
And all three of our kids have dogs now, and they're all the same way.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a great story. Thank you, Steve, very much for your call. And it is something, if you have one as a child, I think that I've heard so many people who have said, I never had animals growing up, and they don't when they're adults. I mean, some of them, well, obviously people will get dogs or cats, but it becomes so much a part of a family. And maybe it's great developmentally or emotionally for children that most people I know who had pets as children, dogs or cats, have them now.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's definitely what you learn about as a kid will have a huge effect, even if, as Steve, I believe, just mentioned, things change and you're no longer having outdoor dogs but indoor dogs. You keep the same kind of family you had growing up in many of these cases with dogs or cats or rabbits.
Yes.
Or whatever other animal.
Yes, how true. We're welcoming phone calls, and here's how you reach our conversation. 800-486-8655. Why do we have pets? Why do you have a pet? Is the question of this hour. And our guest is the author, Daisy Yumas, is the author of a piece in Scientific American that has exactly that question and gives us scientific research answering that question from studies that have been done all over the world. We're welcoming phone calls. And I do want to reiterate, please post your pictures mostly for all of our benefits. So many of you have posted pictures of, these guinea pigs are so cute. And here's an Airedale with sunglasses on, and here's a puppy who's sleeping on his back, and here's a doggy who went to heaven, and here's one that has a little hat on. I'm looking at all these pictures, but, oh, this one is just adorable. So send the pictures of your adorable pets to us, would you please, so we can just look at them and keep ourselves from doing any other kind of work when the show is over. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show is our Facebook page. Thank you. And we'll take more phone calls from you in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Okay, back to phone calls for Daisy Yumas. Why do you have a pet? Tara in Finland, Minnesota. Hi, Tara.
Hi. I know for myself and some friends of mine that they grew up having pets, but as they got older, one wasn't able to have children. Another one just never found her mate, a significant other to have children with. And another one just decided she just didn't want to have, you know, human children. So they all have pets, and those are their babies,
mm-hmm.
and they are their lives. You know, they bring them to doggy daycare, and they consume them. You know, they, like for us, a human child might, they worry about them. They make sure they get their medicine, and it's for them, it's not just a dog or just a cat mm-hmm. or a companion. That's their kid. So like yesterday for Mother's Day, I wish them all a happy Mother's Day because for them, those are their children, you know? And I know for me, I love my pets, and I also have two, you know, human boys, but there's something about having those animals that they have all these distinct different personalities, and it's just a joy to watch and the interaction between them, and there's nothing quite like it.
You're absolutely right. And I do think they can become like our children, even if we have children, that the dog is incorporated, or the cat is, particularly dogs, I think, are incorporated into the conversation. Our dog has a voice, you know. Everybody in the family does it a different way. My husband's voice is funnier than anybody else's. It always brings laughter, even though the dog doesn't know what's going on. But it's woven into the very fabric of the family. You know
Definitely.
What I'm saying, Daisy?
Definitely. Oh, and I love that idea of giving the Happy Mother's Day cards.
Yes.
I do too. To dog mothers or cat mothers or any kind of animal mother, too. That's really sweet.
Right.
I know in my own family, when I left for college, within a week, my dog Happy, who we talked about earlier, had taken my place at the dinner table. I think they know they're part of the family, too. It sort of goes both ways. It's amazing.
And did Happy get a plate and food?
I think my parents tried to discourage that, but they didn't mind him sitting there.
So. This is true in our house, too. The dog sits at the kitchen table. Rich is next in Rhinelander. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hey,
I've had a lot of dogs in my lifetime, and I just want to say none of my dogs has ever preferred their smartphone, laptop, or the TV set to my company. So that means a lot to me, watching how human beings are evolving out in public, particularly. I just value the playfulness of the dog.
Absolutely, and the loyalty. I've met some of your dogs. You're a good dog man, Rich. A good dog dad.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thanks for the call. Doris in Green Bay. Hi.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I think it's wonderful all the things that we found that dogs can do for us. I've had dogs for years, and I've worked with dogs. I am concerned, though, about the dogs that are being prescribed by psychiatrists for emotional support dogs, especially for people who live alone with emotional problems.
Mm.
Dogs are very empathetic, and I'm wondering if there's been any studies done on what's the effect of the dogs of living with constant depression or some other emotional disorder.
Oh, that's a good question. I didn't know dogs were being prescribed for that. Daisy?
I think that's a fantastic question.
Yes.
And there's probably not as much research as there should be into that. One thing that we do know from the research so far is that in these sort of therapy relationships, the studies actually have found really mixed results. And part of it might be that you have to give to the relationship to get out of it. So one other worry I would have in some of these cases is if this person isn't really able to, devote themselves or at least provide for the animal, they may also just have a bad sort of attachment to the animal, and then that they may not get as much out of this as people would hope. So there's definitely things that people should be careful with in those kinds of therapy contexts. The hope, and I think this does work for some people, is that because we seem to get such a positive feeling, a sense of meaning out of nurture and caring for others, the hope is that with this relatively simple interaction with a dog or a cat, an animal, a pet, people are able to find some more meaning and start changing sort of the negative patterns of behavior. But I think you're right. There's a lot more to learn there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Doris, for the call. We go next to Eileen in Minocqua. Hi, Eileen.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment on your discussion before about people buying dogs like they see a breed on TV or movie or something. We used to raise guide dog puppies, and, of course, you can take them anywhere. So you'd be in a restaurant or a store, and they were German Shepherds, and people would come up and go, yes, I want to get a German Shepherd. This is the dog that I want. And I was always careful to say, well, this particular dog may be the one you want, but I'm not sure the German Shepherd breed is right for you because you don't understand what kind of training it takes to get a dog to behave like this.
Right.
So I think that's what some people look at. They look at how the dog behaves and how well they're doing, and they just automatically assume that that's a breed trait rather than part of it is training.
Oh, Eileen, I am so in awe of guide dogs. I am just absolutely so impressed by what they can do for a human being. It is something, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, we just did the basic training for them. But when you think about, I learned so much doing that, because when you think about the things that you have to pay attention to, like, well, yes, you need them to stop at a curb even when it's okay to walk, because
otherwise somebody's going to walk off the edge of the curb.
Yes.
You know, just all sorts of little things, and they have to see that they don't walk people into something that's overhead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the amazing number of things that they have to learn to be guide dogs. So yeah, it's really impressive, and I was really excited to work just at the basic level, working with the puppies. But yeah, it was always funny when people would say, "Oh, what German Shepherds are such," and they are, because I love German Shepherds. But yes, you know, they're such great dogs and stuff. But it's like, yes, but they're highly intelligent.
Yes.
very motivated, need a job. And just because you see somebody that has a really well-trained dog does not mean that that's the breed for you.
Right, right. That's very true, Daisy, isn't it? You can't just see, oh, I like that dog, I'll take that dog. They all...
Absolutely.
Yeah, they all have different temperaments, certainly.
That's right, absolutely. In fact, the cover model for this issue of Scientific American Mind that has this story in it is a border collie, and they're these brilliant, lovely,
yes,
wonderful dogs, but a lot of people I've spoken with are like, you know, they either have amazing experiences or they're like, oh my gosh, I didn't know how to train my dog,
mm-hmm,
and it was terrible. And so really, that's an awesome thing, Eileen, to remind people, you know, they're awesome, but it takes work. You have
right,
to train this animal or you're going to have a lot of problems.
Yeah, and there are certain dogs that need to work. Border collies are in that, and shepherds are too. They need jobs. They have to work. And I think your next piece should be on service dogs and exploring that bond that exists and what happens with a human being turning over that trust to a dog. And I just find that so fascinating. So will you do an article, please?
I would love to.
It would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
it really
absolutely
would be. Thank you.
It's a beautiful relationship.
It is. Yeah, it is. Jeff in Rockford is next. Hi, Jeff.
Yeah, hello.
Hi.
This kind of segues into my story. I needed some cardiac stents. I'm at the Medicare Social Security stage. And anyway, my wife decided that we've never had dogs. And frankly, I've got so much to take care of, I didn't want a snail. And so she decided I was going to get a dog, and we got a dog. Turns out that he was a rescue. A bulldog shih tzu is the worst possible choice to walk. They don't walk.
And they do not walk. Yeah.
And the deal was, if I didn't want the dog, we'd get rid of the dog. And, well, about 3 days into it, we were not going to get rid of the dog. So now we need a second dog. Now we got a poodle, and I got a large mini who's 18 pounds.
Oh, geez.
And we got him, and I decided to train him. To make a long story short, he is a hospital therapy dog at this point.
Oh.
And they started with 27 dogs, and they wound up with 7, and he made the cut.
Oh.
And he is the sweetest, gentlest, kindest little soul in the world.
Oh.
But you know, the hard wiring, I got a bachelor's in psych, and I've a fair amount of education. The point is that he is a pussycat. And about a year ago, some other dog came up to him that was at least 2.5 times his size, and the dog attacked him.
Oh.
And my poodle ripped that dog to shreds.
Oh, my gosh.
And the other owner is profusely apologizing to me. Her dog is laying on its back, bleeding and crying.
Oh.
And my dog is just sitting there. And the vet said, you know what was going on? I said, what? The vet said the dog was protecting you.
Oh.
And he is just, I would take $10,000 a piece for the animals, like I said. But he made the cut. And it was really fun. These people don't mess around in Rockford. It's like an 8-hour,
right,
2-day, you know, a course if they want to be therapy dogs.
Yeah. Oh, sure, sure. And, well, he makes a valid point, Jeff does, that they're animals, right? So you do need to train your dogs. There's more than, oh, what an adorable dog, what it can do for us, et cetera. There's a lot that goes into the relationship, and you have to make sure that they're good with children and that they're very well trained, right, Daisy? We have 30 seconds left. Sorry.
Exactly. Yep. And also that the person who's taking care of that animal knows what to do. It goes both ways. The training goes both ways.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being with us. Go to our Facebook page. We have pictures of people putting their pets on.
And awesome.
Yeah, it's nice. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Daisy Yumas, her piece is in Scientific American, Why Do We Have Pets? It's on our Facebook page. We hope also with a picture of your pet And you can go to the Kathleen Dunn Show and post your picture and so we can go through them when we're off the air. Thanks very much. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the hour, to KP Whaley for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee, and thank you for listening.